From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Open lines later this hour. Next hour, we'll let your mind wander to the pyramids of Egypt and other strange stories on Coast to Coast AM. Story breaking in Los Angeles right now is police firing apparently non-lethal beanbags at a crowd that has been throwing bottles and other objects at the premiere of a film in downtown Hollywood. KFI, our sister station here in Los Angeles, anchor Steve Gregory, maybe in the middle of all this mess. Steve, what's going on?
Well, George, right now LAPD has control of the situation here in the heart of Hollywood. In fact, it all started earlier this evening at a movie premiere for a documentary, and right before the premiere, there was a concert scheduled. And apparently more people showed up than there were seats inside of the theater. And that's when the crowd spilled out into the streets. And when the police tried to get it under control, that's when a riot broke out.
Things seem to be calming down.
Yeah, they have just seconds ago, George, they reopened Hollywood Boulevard in front of the Grauman's Chinese Theater and in front of the Kodak Theater where the Oscars are held every year. And now there are crowds of people coming out from the local Cirque du Soleil show. And there are people coming out that didn't even know there was a riot going on earlier in the evening. So now there are hundreds of people coming out from earlier shows. And the Hollywood Bowl tonight, that's just up the road, had Gladys Knight and the Pips performing. And that crowd is just now letting out. So you can imagine it's gridlock in Hollywood.
A lot of tension. Steven, be safe out there.
You betcha, my friend. Take care.
Steve Gregory, KFI. Lots of tension. People are acting strange these days, indicative of just this situation. A universal flu vaccine that protects against all strains may be within reach in the next 5 years. I won't get it, though. Replacing annual shots developed for specific flu viruses. They say about 200,000 people are hospitalized with the flu every year, and they estimate that 36,000 people die from the seasonal flu. But they're working on this universal flu vaccine. Stocks plunging Wednesday as the United States edged closer to an unprecedented default on its debt. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was headed for its worst weekly decline in nearly a year. In this summer of extreme heat, the death tolls from the last heat wave, right now, they're numbering about 64 people have died around the United States. Ranchers in several states reported thousands of cattle lost to heat and drought as well. In Pennsylvania, an 11-year-old girl recovering after she was struck by a bolt of lightning. What's so unusual about all of this? It was sunny out. This storm, they said, was miles away. That's weird. John Chavokas, an advertising man who is credited with introducing the incredible slogan into popular culture with his "Please Don't Squeeze the Charmin" campaign, has died at the age of 74. Chavokas died of a stroke at a Manhattan hospital. He was a junior copywriter at an ad agency in 1964. He said the image of housewives squeezing fruit in a supermarket inspired his bathroom tissue campaign. The broad, dark plains on the moon's near side have long been known to be volcanic deposits made of lava flows. But now researchers report that in addition to these deposits, the moon has unusual dome-shaped volcanic deposits of a different composition on its far side. These rocks are rich with silica, and their origins are baffling these scientists. But maybe Richard C. Hoagland has some answers. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. My, oh, my, oh, my, they say the moon is not supposed to be full of surprises. We've been to the moon, right? Well, astronomers are saying, you know what, I'm not so sure. Geologists, they're saying not so sure. As a matter of fact, a planetary scientist at the Washington University in St. Louis said his colleagues report these findings, and they're not too sure. Maybe Richard C. Hoagland has some answers. Richard, how are you?
Good evening, George. I'm fine. You're a little low. They could turn the gain up in the control room.
You are what it is, but you sound great, so that's what matters.
Okay.
Hey, tell me a little bit about what they think they found.
Well, this is very weird because for decades, literally, I mean, even before the space age, astronomers have been looking at the moon and trying to find volcanoes. originally, hundreds of years ago, when people looked at the moon like Galileo and they saw some of these features, these round circular things, they thought, oh, analogs to Earth, those are volcanoes. And then as science got more sophisticated, particularly as telescopes, big ones, were built and people took really good imagery of the moon from the Earth, it looked less and less like these were volcanoes and more like they were impact features, meaning big rocks smashing into the moon, creating a crater, because the rock buries itself in the crust and then explodes with huge amounts of kinetic energy, almost like an atomic bomb, those level energies, and you basically have this huge outflow of material called ejecta. It was Gene Shoemaker, my old departed geologist friend back in the 60s, who, using the Barringer crater, the meteor crater just west of me over in Arizona tonight, actually proved in the 60s that most of the features on the moon are impact craters. Well, scientists have been looking for volcanic features forever and ever and ever, and they thought they'd found them, and they actually directed Apollo 17 in 1972 to land in Taurus Littrow in the upper right corner of the moon,
yeah,
if you look at it from the Earth, to see if they could see volcanic evidence of stuff on the surface, and it turned out not to be the case. So volcanoes on the moon are incredibly elusive. Well, now these guys at Washington University seem to have found, at about 60 degrees north on the far side of the moon, not the dark side, the far side, meaning the side that never faces the Earth, because the moon orbits the Earth and rotates in the same period of time, they found this cluster of objects that appeared to be volcanoes that have erupted maybe 800 million years ago. But they're really, really weird because, A, they are absolutely chock full of very interesting radioactive materials, which is very rare on the moon. There's only one other cluster on the near side known to have this composition. And two, they have a very high concentration of what they call silica, which is very different from the normal basaltic kind of rocks that the moon is mostly made of, at least on the near side, the Earth side, the front side.
Is it glass-like?
It has glass-like components, but it isn't even, it's more like granites. It's not, I mean, this is, again, this is all from NASA. We're getting it from a single source, NASA, so you have to kind of calibrate it from NASA. But it appears to be, and I've looked at the original paper now out of the Lunar Research Institute, et cetera, it appears to be a natural feature, but it's so weird and unusual that it actually calls into question origin of the moon theories, like the discovery of all that water they found recently, and then the impacts by the La Crosse spacecraft and the imagery taken there at the lunar poles showing amazing geometry and then presence of things like mercury in as much volume as the water that they kicked up by the impact. So what we're seeing here is a kind of a puzzle where the pieces are becoming very unusual, but they don't give us a complete picture, except they're telling us that the old picture of the moon, as we have been given it for the last 40 years since Apollo, is not correct.
Richard, years ago you talked about glass-like tubes on the moon. Was it on Mars or the moon?
On Mars, yeah.
Okay. I was going to say this is not
but
the
I
same thing.
I have talked about glass-like ruins. So unless we're dealing with a very bizarre science that is not telling us the truth at all, which frankly I cannot believe that's the case because there's too many cross-checks in the process, I have to believe that what we're seeing is intrinsic to the moon, intrinsic to its origins as a celestial body on which stuff was built much later, and the fact that this is such an incredibly interesting anomaly is part of the story of the moon's origin as opposed to somebody building stuff on it much later on.
What else is going on? What have they discovered these days?
Well, the same space mission, the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter mission, which found this unusual feature on the far side, also a couple days ago appears to have photographed the grave, if you will, of a man-made spacecraft, Lunar Orbiter 2, that was launched in November of 1966, and deliberately crashed onto the moon in October of 1967.
How cool.
And they found this weird butterfly-shaped feature, which is just about exactly where the radio and computer plots indicated that the structure should have landed, but of course it was on the far side, so they couldn't see it impact. So it's all done by computer modeling of the orbit, and it's so close to it that I think they found it. But it's really bizarre, and you go to Google and Google Lunar Orbiter 2 impact, you'll come up with pictures, and Lex has probably already got them posted on the Coast to Coast website as well.
Richard, there's so many things going on in this world of science. I had Steve Bassett on the program talking about his upcoming trip to the United Kingdom. You're going there as well.
I'm going to be at the same conference.
Tell me, how did the invite come, and why the interest in American researchers over there?
Well, I think it's because we're doing cutting-edge work.
Of course.
It's kind of simple. You know, you got to go to where, you know, the old Willie, what's his name, joke about why he robbed banks? He said, well, that's where the money is. Well, if you want the researchers that are doing cutting-edge research, you come to the United States, because we're the ones doing cutting-edge research in these very esoteric fields. I'm looking forward to the LEADS conference because I have put together such an amazing presentation, which involves everything from Comet Elenine to the astonishing new imagery of NASA's visit with the Dawn spacecraft to Vesta, to the politics of the Obama administration now that the shuttle program has ended and what we're going to be doing after it. And I have a lot of surprises for people in all of those categories, not the least of which is Elenine. I've actually, since our last show on this subject, George, I've had some emails from some radio hams who are asking me where to point their antennas in the sky so they can potentially listen for radio signals coming from Elenine in our time capsule model. So this show is playing a very pivotal part in trying to figure out what this object is.
Now, when will you come back from the United Kingdom?
My speech is on the evening of the 6th, on Saturday night. They've given me kind of an open-ended runway, which is very good because we might go long. And then we come back, excuse me, after the conference, I'm going to be going south to Stonehenge and Avebury and some other monuments to try to measure their torsion fields, equivalent to what I did at the behest of NBC in Teotihuacan and Guatemala. And then we'll be coming back probably on the 12th, I believe. So I think we're going to be there about a week.
So I will meet you in Albuquerque.
Oh, that's right.
On August 19th. I've got an event with KKOB, our affiliate up there, 770. And I'm doing my show live there. And you and Robin are going to be on it.
Fantastic.
So
yes,
we'll have
looking forward to it. In fact, you're going to be doing your kind of public speaking thing the afternoon at the Sandia Resort, which
yes.
is an amazing place. It's all built in Native American tradition with slab stones stacked up like pyramids. It's architecturally amazing. It's at the foot of the Sandia Mountains, our 5,000-foot-high mountains, which are 5,000 feet above sea level because we're a mile high, so you're going to enjoy your visit to Albuquerque again very much.
Richard, have you heard this story about the Russians and the International Space Station?
Yeah, it's like this is such a non-story. Back during the Skylab days, there was real concern that Skylab, which was modest by current spacecraft standards, would impact on a you know inhabited area, a city or someplace. So what they did is they made plans with a great deal of effort, because Skylab had been abandoned for years, to try to take control of it by remote radio control and vector it in to a soft landing in the Pacific. They almost succeeded. They actually splashed part of it in the Midwest deserts of Australia, but most of it went out to sea. Well, when Mir was scheduled to re-enter, there was a much greater and more professional effort to make sure that it did not impact any inhabited areas, because it's so much bigger and it's got big chunks and tanks and structures and all that, and they would survive, some of them, entry through the Earth's atmosphere, and you might wind up, you know, killing somebody. So there was a great deal of effort devoted to stop landing it in the Pacific so that it would not hurt anyone when it reentered. Well, the Russians, for some reason, this story is now making the rounds. They have, you know, our Congress and the Russians have decided to authorize habitation of the space station through the year 2020, which is what? It's 2011 now? That's
seven and a half to nine years. Yeah.
So why are they worrying about the demise of the space station in 9 years? I think this is political. I think the Russians are sending signals vis-a-vis their space program compared to our space program with the end of the shuttle program, and they're gently trying to nudge us in public to get our act in gear and make sure we have spacecraft which will be in a position to keep the space station in orbit or make use of it after the 2020 date, which, of course, could also be extended based on provisioning and fuel and other things like that. But it requires a decent spacecraft to do that. And at the moment, obviously, we have nothing, and the Russians are kind of strapped for cash. So I think they're giving us a political hint in public, get your act together, which is not the only hint the world is giving us. You know, we're looking at this debt ceiling nonsense,
my God, yeah.
And people have got to be looking at us and saying, what are they up to? Can't they get their act together?
I know it. Here we are. We're supposed to be the richest, most prosperous nation, and it's embarrassing around the world. Absolutely.
It's incredibly embarrassing.
And let me ask you this. I took note of a company called Space Exploration that NASA has immediately paid them. They've been working on this for years, but I guess
no,
they
can't. This is Leon Musk, SpaceX.
Okay. That they are going to send something up to the International Space Station real soon. Pretty fast they make this announcement after they shut down the shuttle, isn't it?
Well, no. That's been in the works for a long time. NASA has been partially funding through the so-called COTS program, which is now an acronym. I don't remember the, you know, it's commercial something. The whole idea of the Obama administration transition from all government space efforts to partial government, partial commercial is a really good idea. And Musk had some problems in his early years in trying to duplicate what the Mercury program did.
Mm-hmm.
His last couple of three missions have been extraordinarily successful. They have a manned spacecraft, cum cargo carrier, called Dragon, which will ride on top of a big rocket called Falcon. And it looks like he's going to be in a position, among other commercial carriers, to take over the cargo carrying to and from the space station that the shuttle used to do. However, the Dragon spacecraft has not been what they call man-rated, meaning you have to put other things on it to make sure you can get the crew off in case you have a catastrophic explosion. Neither has the Falcon booster, which will waft the Dragon capsule into orbit like the old Mercury days. So all of that procedural stuff and engineering safing has to be done, and that's what could take much longer than some of the projections based on technical analyses. But Musk seems now to be kind of ahead of his curve and doing very, very well, and we're looking forward in a couple, 3 months to another test flight of the Falcon-Dragon combination. So it looks like the transition from all NASA to NASA and other commercial carriers, just like back in the 1920s when the government helped create the domestic airline industry by funding mail carriers with private, you know, aircraft, is moving along. So we may actually have men in space and women in space from American soil sooner than Americans might think tonight.
Well, I was going to ask you, can a private company on its own, if it gets its own funding, send a person to the moon if they possess the technology all by themselves without any approval from NASA or the government?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's nothing technically standing in the road. It's all political. And given that Obama has really made a crucial movement, I mean, Reagan tried to do this, and NASA blocked him politically. His own agency fought him tooth and nail, and ultimately they won. Obama appears now to be winning the argument, should we have only government space flight, or should we have commercial space flight? And someday, I've told you, George, you and I can do coast from around the moon if they move as fast as things seem to be moving.
That would be intriguing. I would do that.
What?
I would do that.
Me too.
Like I said, though, I would not go to Mars with you. There is no way I'm going to be in a capsule and on the planet for 3 years with you.
That's all right, George. We have other things we could do.
All right, Richard. And I'll see you in Albuquerque in a few weeks, okay?
Excellent.
All right. Richard C. Hoagland, he's going out to Leeds in the United Kingdom to speak at a major UFO X conference on disclosure. And I've got a speaking engagement at our affiliate KKOB in Albuquerque in August. It's on my calendar. We will be out there. And if you're in that area, I hope you will too. I've got open lines for you when I come back for the next 30 minutes. Here are the numbers. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First time caller is 818-501-4721. The wild card line is 818-501-4109 and Skype George 97313. Well, next hour on Coast to Coast AM, Carmen Bolter joins us as we talk about the Pyramid Code and some other mysteries. And when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM, we'll take your phone calls. Open lines on Coast to Coast AM. You know, last night on the program, when we had Judica Ellis on as our guest, she was talking about how you can say special things to get special things done, praying to saints and doing whatever you have to do. And she said, you can even do that to make some money. Got an email from someone in today who said, George, so I did it. I did the entire procedure just like she said, and somebody came up to me and gave me a can of soda. And I figured, you know what? It's worth something. It works. I went home, and my wife was jumping up and down. She was all excited. I said, what's going on? And she said that we had overpaid on her schooling, and they sent her a check for $140 today. So it does work. Well, I guess it does. Let's go to the phones. We've got open lines for you this entire half hour before next hour. Carmen Bolter comes in as we talk about her work on the Pyramid Code. We will go to Youngstown, Ohio. Ryan's with us east of the Rockies. Ryan, hello there.
Hi, George. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. I talked to you probably almost a month ago when you had Joshua P. Warren on.
Yeah.
Yeah. But tonight I wanted to talk to you about money.
About money?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're familiar with the Federal Reserve?
Oh, yes, very much so. Which you know is not part of the federal government.
Yes. My dad was just talking to me about the Federal Reserve today and about their, like, 99-year deal.
Yeah.
They had, like, a 99-year deal, and he told me the end date of their 99-year deal, coincidentally, is the same day as the end of the Mayan calendar.
No, it's not. That can't be that soon. Federal Reserve is going to go on for a million years. I'll check into that, though.
Yeah, he told me it started in 1913, and
It started that early.
Okay, yeah, he told me something about that. They met while Congress was on Christmas vacation or whatever, and they passed this 99-year deal.
Okay, I'll check into that.
But, I have another question, too.
All right.
Are you familiar with savings bonds?
Yeah, I used to have a lot when I was a kid.
Okay. I have a lot from when I was a kid, you know, get them from grandparents for Christmas.
Of course, I cashed all mine in now, by the way.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm only 22. Yeah,
and you're right. It was created in 1913, by the way. So you're right about that.
Now, with the looming default thing, would they be worthless since that's technically public debt?
Now, that's a good question. That's a very good question. If we go into default, that means we can't pay most of our debt. And I got to tell you, they're going to pay the big boys before they pay you. And so they may say, well, you can't cash this in today. There's no money for it. You might have to wait.
Okay. So I looked on the Treasury website about it, and of course there's nothing about it.
No, there'll be nothing there. People will panic.
Yeah, I looked on, I can say Yahoo, right? Answers.
Yep.
Oh, okay. I looked on the Yahoo Answers website, and somebody had something posted, and one of their top contributors said that more or less what you're saying, but that they'll default on their debt. Like, that won't be one of the first things they'll default on.
And you know, let's just hope that these people in Washington get this resolved sooner than later. How embarrassing. I mean, the whole world is looking at us, right? And we can't even get our act together. We spend too much money. Come on. You know, I would even accept a program that said, okay, we're going to balance the budget. We're not even going to cut the budget. We're not going to reduce anything. We're going to approve more spending, but we're going to balance the budget. But over 25 years, we're going to slash $10 trillion from the budget. And we're going to do it in little stages every year. That way it won't be a big hit. First of all, the economy cannot sustain a big slash in the budget. I'm sorry, it just can't. And at the same time, we can't sustain spending the kind of money we're spending right now. We can't do that either. So we should do something to just balance it out and then reduce it over a real long time. It's like a big payment plan, and at least get out of it that way with a pledge that they just won't overspend anymore. We'll see what happens. Mike, Butte, Montana, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, George. Can you hear me all right?
I sure can.
All right. I'm going to change the subject. My whole thing is mirrors in old cabins where old-timers used to shave and do their thing and clean up in the morning and stuff, and having oil spots left on them from sightings of UFOs. Or in my case, my personal case, I heard one of kind of a weird UFO, but my dad knew.
What happened?
Spheres. They'd come up out of this swamp, these spheres, and they'd leave oil spots on his mirror that he shaved off.
Oil spots on his mirror?
Yes, sir.
I don't understand.
Well, the sphere would shine in the mirror, and the next morning there'd be an oil spot on it, and he'd circle it with a like a Sharpie. And then he had all these oil spots on this mirror where all these spheres rose up out of the swamp.
What's a seer?
A sphere. S-P-H-E-R-E. A sphere. You know, like a swamp gas kind of thing, UFO kind of thing.
Okay, no, I never knew what that was. You just taught me something. So something physical was happening when he was seeing these things.
Well, he'd see them at night, and then the next morning there'd be the imprint on the mirror.
Huh. That's interesting. Okay. Let's go to Joanna in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Welcome to the program. Hi there.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, my pleasure.
About 20 years now. I have a question. I met with Mary Rodwell from Australia last year in a group of about 30 people, and myself and three other families had been adopted. We were Native American, or these other people had adopted Native American children, and it was ironic that our adopted parents were all in the space program, and we're wondering why. Are they trying to track us for a particular reason? Does anybody know anything about a database and people, of Native descent that was adopted out? Are they being tracked, and how would somebody go find that
out? That's a good question. And what do you mean they were all in space program? What did they do?
My adopted mother was a senior writer and editor for Thiokol Chemical Corporation.
Okay.
She had an above top secret clearance. The only thing she ever admitted was she said that they are UFOs. And then the day that the shuttle blew up, she said Thiokol's in trouble. She knew exactly what it was. And then the other people that was in Mary's group, they were seeing and having visitations from extraterrestrials. And they had connections working in the space program.
Did they all know each other?
We didn't know each other at all. And even one lady down in Phoenix, I'm not going to say her name, we have the same scoop mark in the same place.
Okay, I don't know where you would even start to try to track all this together. I really don't. Other than you might want to call a couple experts in the field of UFO abductions, like the Bud Hopkins and those kind of folks, and see if they have any kind of database on this. That's all I could think. Let's go to Charles, Reno, Nevada, Skype line. Hey, Charles, go ahead.
Hey, hello, George.
Hi.
I'd like to relate an alien abduction story.
All right.
From a customer that I had come into a store I work at. A huge fan, by the way. She came in. She said that she was driving down on 395 from Reno toward Bridgeport, and she was expected around 8 or 9 p.m. She had started here in Reno at around 6, but she was expected by her family, and she said that the next thing she knew, she woke up in a parking lot, at a restaurant almost all the way to Bridgeport, and she had a she woke up with her two dogs in her car. She had a lapse of memory. She had lost time exactly. She woke up. She said it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and the odometer on her vehicle was all eights. She said she had a pedometer, you know, one of those walking.
Those walking meters, sure.
The walking meter. She said that was all eights as well. She eventually talked to the Highway Patrol and California Highway Patrol and got to her destination and got to her family. But she said the next day that her two dogs seemed like they were fine, but their fur was coming off in clumps. So it's kind of like a stress, I guess, some kind of stress that they had received. But they were all fine after a couple of days. But anyway, really strange story. And she said, yeah, she's pretty sure she was abducted. I mean, just a lapse in time. I asked her if she had been through any kind of hypnosis or anything to figure out what had happened. And she said, no.
No, she'd be a classic case for that. She should do that.
That's what I think, too.
You know, that's what the psychiatrist did to Barney and Betty Hill. Took them back and got this incredible story in under hypnosis. That's what you get. We'll go to Gary in Allentown, Pennsylvania, first-time caller. Hi, Gary. Thanks for calling.
Hey, George. How are you?
Okay, great.
I had a question about your guest last night. I can't remember his name, but it was in reference to the God particle. And
we had a couple people on. Judica Illis, of course, was the main guest. And
yes,
the God particle people, of course, that was Leonard Mlodinow. And he's a physicist. He was on the first hour.
Okay. Well, my question was, you know, I was wondering what the Catholic Church and Catholicism would, how they would react, you know, if we did find this particle and their theories of evolution creationism and all that. I'm just wondering
I think the Catholic Church is starting to bend when it comes to science and supernatural. I think they're kind of blending both of them together now. I don't think they'd panic. The Vatican historically has been in on science. Whatever they do with it, who knows? But, I mean, they have, observatories with huge telescopes. They've been on cutting-edge science since the beginning, even though they did not appreciate Galileo at all.
But
then he was found out to be right. But I don't think they'd panic at all. I think they'd come up with some solution to tie that into their belief system. But I don't think they put it down.
So they're God created everybody and whatever. I mean, what would that do to the Bible and all that stuff?
They would still say God created the God particle.
Oh, right, exactly.
That's how they take care of that one. Next up, we go to Hawaii. Charles is there, west of the Rockies. How you doing out there?
Oh, hello, welcome.
Aloha.
Aloha.
I better learn that. I'm going to go up there pretty soon for a while.
Oh, good. Okay. But I'd like to quickly talk about Robert A. Heinlein's last book called For Us the Living.
Okay.
Where in about two-thirds into the book, he talks about a board game for economic analysis, where one of his conclusions is that the money supply should be expanded with the population, and that money should be provided to provide a guaranteed minimum income for people.
I like that idea.
And so we don't have to worry about how much debt is made, because we don't have to balance the budget as if it was a closed system.
Yeah, but, it's been a good old boys network. They take care of themselves first. They forget about people later. I said, for example, all this money they've given away, the top TARP money, all that money, they should have given away to the American taxpayers. As a gift. Here, I don't know how much that would have been. 10,000, 100,000. I didn't do the mathematics on it.
Yeah.
But you know what? If they had given it to people and said, you've got to buy goods or services in the United States with this check we're giving you, Do you know what that would do to the economy? We'd be making things like crazy or trying to get them into the country.
You know, one thing is that the unemployment and overproduction are opposite sides of the same coin, and we could have neither problem instead of both problems.
And we've got to be able to pull back, Charles, manufacturing in this country. I mean, what do you do in Hawaii? What's your industry other than pineapples and things like that?
Tourism.
That's it.
And some high tech with the observatories and things.
But no manufacturing at all, really?
Yeah, and what happens to people that want to try things in a machine shop? They don't have manufacturing.
Exactly. Exactly, and we need to go back to that. Let's go to Shelby Township in Michigan. Bob, beautiful
hey,
area.
George.
How are you?
Good, thanks. You know what I like about you? I've been listening to this show for a long time. That you're so tolerant of your callers, that when you know people need time to develop what they're saying, you let them go until they have something good to say, kind of like Art used to do.
Well, I want to do that. I don't want to put people down. You know, I speed some people along. Some people have a difficult time putting together their thought process. But you know, I'm not here to scream at them or put them down. You know, there was a talk show that would refuse to put people on who stuttered. They would not put them on. We will. I'm not going to put people down. I mean, that's not what I'm here for.
Well, I appreciate it, and it really shows through. And sometimes you've got some real gems that start out, you know, that some of the other hosts might hang up on them or shoo them along. But after you let them develop out, they really have something very interesting to say.
Yeah, great stories.
I really appreciate that when you're on as a host. That you know, I feel that everyone gets the opportunity to say what they're trying to say.
Well, we do the best we can.
Yeah, you do. By the way, now the Mayan calendar 2012.
Mm-hmm.
I've been thinking about it, you know, and I'm wondering, did they make that calendar for the Mayans because they predicted their downfall and things like that? But how many things in the Mayan calendar that are really important were missed? Things like big earthquakes, nukes,
yeah,
birth of Christ, World War II, the tsunami. But nothing about that. Catholic Church, China. And so I'm wondering that, you know, that 2012, is it the end of the world, people think, for everyone? Or maybe the Mayans, their culture could be what...
Maybe. You know, that's going to be a Friday night next year. We'll be on the air. We'll have a cast of thousands. And there's that high possibility that we'll go through that program and nothing will happen.
You know, I had asked a while ago of you. You said it was I had asked about the alignment that's coming on that day, and you said it was like at 11:11. Was that AM or PM?
That is, I believe it's AM.
AM. So by the time you're on,
everything would have happened exactly.
Yeah.
Now I still suspect it could have something to do with the sun. I'm not going to rule that out. By any means. James and Mayor Arizona, I've got just a minute left, James. Can you get in what you have?
Hi, yes, sir. I'll try.
Okay.
My niece is out here visiting. She just turned 6, and she's been I've been showing her the sky every time she comes out. And tonight, she was pointing at a satellite with a pointer, and all of a sudden it turned, so we turned it off. she's learning pretty good, and she... And these two jets come flying out of nowhere, supersonic speed, and they turned off their lights and started shooting. This forward jet started shooting these. They look like little shooting stars, little plasma beams at it. And that, you know, that wasn't a satellite because it turned directions. But
yeah, there's no way a satellite would do that.
These 6 things, years old.
That's a great vision. She saw something happening. Look, Ed Grimsley, one of our guests, believes that there is a war going on up in space. Stick with us. We're coming back in a moment as we talk about pyramids on Coast to Coast AM.